What's up, you little alien weirdos that have been hidden by the government for years and only come out right now from declassified texts? How's it going? It's me, Craig, from the Downbeat Podcast. When I record these, right, I go into like a zen state. I never watch these back afterwards. I do them, forget that they're going to go on the internet, potentially seen by like thousands of people, and then I realise I probably said some dumb stuff. That one was maybe the dumbest intro. Let's get straight into it. Give me some support, would you? Patreon.com/downbeat. It's a quid. You get early access to these. You get early access to merch. You get tons of stuff for £1. Why is it a pound? I believe the Downbeat to be 10% as good as Spotify. And that is 10% of Spotify. Ignore the tax that they add on. That's not my fault. That is the fault of the government that is hiding those aliens that I talked about earlier. If you don't want to go to Patreon and give me a pound, you can go to thedownbeat.at, so it spells Downbeat. Pick up a shirt, pick up a beanie. You could maybe even pick up a jacket by this point. You could pick up a lovely look, a hoodie with like an embroidery, like a nice warm one, heavy for winter. Is it a streetwear brand? Is it a podcast? No one knows by this point. www.thedownbe.at. I'd love you to pick something up before I talk about my guest this week, who it was an alien to me, very alien based this. He was an alien to me. I didn't know him, but I'm a massive fan of his band. Let's talk about the sponsor of today's podcast, Displate. Displate make metal posters. If you're watching this on youtube.com, number one, press subscribe. Number two, you can see in the background a lovely Akira one and a Downbeat one. The posters are made from metal, there's no paper, there's no mess, there's no drilling. They got everything you could possibly want on that store. They got anime, they got movies, they got games, they got random like live, laugh, love stuff. And on the flip side of that, they got like wacky live, laugh, love. If you're like a live, laugh, Limp Bizkit kind of person, they got that stuff too. Listeners of the Downbeat Podcast can get 22% off 1-3 displates or 33% off 3 or more by going to displate.com and using the code Downbeat. It supports the podcast, it supports me, it supports your walls looking sick AF. Check it out. My guest this week is Daniel Tracy of the band Death Heaven. Not to be confused with Death Havana, who have also been on the podcast. Very different music. He plays the drums in Death Heaven. He is a very fast, very blasty drummer. They are, without question, one of my favourite metal bands. They mix like a shoegaze element with actual black metal, without any of the like dodgy connotations that black usually comes with black metal. We caught up the day of their core festival. I was super stoked that he messaged me saying he wanted to do the pod, and I was like, funnily enough, I'm a massive fan. So we talk a ton, an absolute ton, about their re-release of Sunbather, one of my favourite albums of all time. It comes out tomorrow, November, provided you're listening to this when it releases, which I hope you are. It comes out tomorrow, November 17th, re-release of one of the, I'll just go out and say it, one of the best albums of all time. There was tons of stuff I wanted to know about the interludes, about his drumming. I found out insane stuff about the recording process. One of my favourite things to do on the Downbeat is when I interview someone I don't know, but I am like a stan of. Daniel Tracy is one of those people. Death Heaven is one of those bands. It's Daniel Tracy of Death Heaven on the Downbeat Podcast. Daniel Tracy.
Craig Reynolds.
Welcome to the Downbeat.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Is it Dan or is it Daniel?
I go by Dan usually.
Dan.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah, since seventh grade. That was when the big change happened.
The big change from Daniel.
Daniel.
What age is seventh grade?
For us, it would be 12 or 13. I was a little young for my grade, so I was 12.
And then you made the decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I just didn't want to go by Daniel anymore. I don't know why. I was like, I want to reinvent myself a little bit. I was starting to listen to a lot of metal, you know, I discovered Metallica, stuff like that. And I feel like a Dan these days. So
I feel like a Dan. You got any other nicknames?
No. I did move from the Bay Area to Orange County when I was 16, and everyone called me San Fran Dan.
San Fran Dan.
That was a thing for a minute.
Wait, say that again. You moved from?
I moved from the Bay Area to Orange County when I was 16. So I was born in SoCal, moved to the Bay when I was 10. Moved back down when I was 16, moved back up when I was 22.
That's interesting.
But for a period of time, I was known as San Fran Dan.
San Fran Dan. Don't say that too many times because that will stick.
I don't mind it.
You'll have people. I mean, you're back in San Fran now, so yeah. You are San Fran Dan.
I'm officially, actually San Fran Dan.
What was the reason for the move in?
I love the city so much. And I did kind of my growing up years in the East Bay in a town called San Ramon. It's actually where I met Shiv, our guitar player, that same year when I was 12, seventh grade.
You've known each other that long?
That long. Yeah, it's kind of a thing with Deaf Heaven is that I would say we're almost two sets of best friends. George and Carrie grew up together since they were 14 or something like that. And then Shiv and I grew up together since we're 12 or 13. And then we got Chris, our bass player, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. But other than that, it's kind of nice having those factions where we're just kind of inseparable no matter what, And yeah, it's been great.
How did you meet? So where did the other two grow up?
So they're from Modesto. George and Carrie are from Modesto, and they
where's that?
Oh, so that is Central Valley, California.
Okay,
it's almost like smack dab in the middle between LA and SF. And I didn't spend a whole lot of time out there. And if you don't know anyone out there, it's kind of why would you visit it? I mean, you're aware of Bakersfield and Fresno.
Yep, I know those. Corn, yeah. And then. I feel like there's a lot of new metal from Fresno.
It's kind of the vibe. I mean, that band Edema, which I think they're related to Jonathan Davis. Yeah, that whole new metal vibe is alive and well in Central Valley.
How old are you?
I'm 35.
36.
Right on.
And there's going to be some interesting metal questions then.
same era.
We've grown up in exactly the same era.
Seen the progression. I met Shiv when I was 12. He had just moved from Africa. He grew up in Kenya. And they moved to New Jersey for a little bit, but they didn't like it, so they moved to the Bay Area. And he was just kind of this like odd kid in my class, and he was wearing a metal shirt. I was wearing a metal shirt. I was like, what's up, bro? And I like, what's up, bro?
Do you remember what the shirts were?
I'm assuming it was Metallica or Pantera or Slayer, because we're pretty, we're dipping our toes at that point.
Yeah.
But I definitely... distinctly remember blasting Sepultura in our PE class, our gym class, when we were 13, bringing a boombox to PE class, and everyone was like, what the hell is wrong with these kids?
I feel like we would have been friends.
Oh, yeah.
That was me as well.
100%.
Same age, same band.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it was. Like, a lot of people at the time, like, I did have a new metal phase as well, but it didn't start with that. It was Metallica.
I think that was the thing. You get into Metallica, you get into the old school metal, and you see like, oh, what's popping now? Like, what's the current metal?
Yeah.
And it's definitely new metal at the time. So it's kind of unavoidable to fall down that path a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Metallica to Sepultura pipeline is pretty easy.
It's pretty straightforward. Yeah.
What if there was another band that was just a little bit faster, that still had the acoustic guitars and still had all this straight in?
Right. And when I found Pantera was over, I was just like, this is my band. So sick.
I found Sepultura and Pantera on the same day.
So sick.
Far Beyond Driven and Rise.
Nice.
I bought them at a garage sale. Because I was buying, what was I buying? The Beavis and Butthead compilation. No, I had the Beavis and Butthead compilation. And there was a guy that was selling all these CDs. I always wonder about this old guy, like... is he dead now? Or what? This is a long time ago. But he was like, if you like that, you're going to like those two. And that was it.
Nice.
I mean, my mum put it on the way home.
It's a big figure for you. Kind of put you on.
Yeah.
So check this out.
Just some guy.
That's sick.
Just some guy.
Nice.
Welcome to Glasgow.
Thank you very much.
You London yesterday?
Yeah. So, no, actually, we were in Arctangent. We played Bristol.
Yeah. Lineup was so good.
It was fun. It was cool. Our day, we didn't really know too many people on our day, but it was a good time. It was cool. We played Arctangent back in 2015 as well, and super fun, and it's good to be back. Kind of a similar vibe, just out in the greenery of England, just really beautiful scenery, and yeah, it was fun.
I've never been. Like, I see it every year. The lineup is insane every year, and I've always got something on where I'm just like, I just can't go.
Yeah. There's a lot of festivals out here, huh? Especially this time of year.
Every weekend.
Yeah.
I'm always either away playing them or some like this year is like something up with this. Are you doing
10-year sunbather?
So we are doing a few sunbather sets this year. We did that yesterday at ArcTangent.
Is it like the whole record?
Whole record front to back.
Are you doing that tonight?
No. It's kind of a Radius thing where it was an ArcTangent exclusive. So
we couldn't.
Yeah.
Did you play two sets or did you just play that back to front?
We just played it just front to back, yeah. And we actually have it
back to front to back.
Yeah, we have it set up where Carrie and Shiv, they worked out how to play the interludes. So there's like a couple of things on tracks, but they're actually doing the guitars live.
Cool.
Which is actually kind of awesome because Chris and I just kind of dip. We leave the stage for a few minutes between every song, catch our breath, and then come back out all refreshed. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's weird. It's
like blasting.
Yeah, it's a lot of blasting for sure. We used to play that set when that record came out initially, and we would just rip through the songs. There would be like 30 seconds between songs. So I played the whole fucking album just like literally front to back. And by the end of the set, I would puke, I would pass out. It was a crazy period of time where I was just like running myself ragged.
Someone once sent me, unsolicited, I might say, so I'm not going to say who it was.
Okay.
A video of you, because they knew I was a fan of the band. This is ages ago. This must have been Sunbather tour. And I'm sure it was you. And you were blasting, obviously, and in between songs, you were dunking your arms into ice buckets.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I actually still do that. That's something I currently do.
Give me the juice.
Yeah, so I wish I didn't have to, but it's a carpal tunnel issue that I have. I think just so many years of playing those beats and playing those songs and just not really taking care of myself, not doing stretches, not doing icing or anything like that, kind of caught up with me. And I actually distinctly remember the moment when it started to all kind of go wrong. We were having a fill-in bass player back in 2017, and we were teaching him the songs. And we were sitting there in our practice space for like 9 hours just playing these Sunbather songs and these New Bermuda songs over and over and over again. I just didn't really think about it, and I just kept going and going and going. And by the time I was done, you know, like 9 hours in, my wrists were just completely swollen. It was like a mountain, like right here. It was just... And I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is happening here? And it kind of tripped me out. And I didn't really know what to do for the longest time. I just kind of played through it, just kept going, you know? And my tour manager, Edgar, we're on a tour with This Will Destroy You a couple months later. He's like, dude.
Amazing band.
Incredible band. It was such an awesome
unbelievable.
Tour. Yeah. But he kind of saw me suffering. I was taking like 4 Advil before the set just to try to get the swelling down. He's like, dude, fuck this, man. I'm just going to put a bucket of ice next to you. Just when your wrists are hurting, just throw it in the ice. And I was like, I don't know if that's going to work. It sounds kind of like, you know, you're supposed to stay warmed up. You don't want to like cool down, right? I was like, it sounds kind of antithetical or whatever, but I'll try it. And it worked like a charm. It was perfect. It's like as soon as I play or finish like a song that's really intense, put the sticks down, dunk the hands, and it kind of just brings the swelling down. Kind of brings you back to baseline.
So it's still an ongoing issue.
Yeah, it's still something I do, which it's not as big of an issue anymore because some of our newer songs are a little more mellow and I don't have to blast the entire time. So that gives me a little break, but it's just something I've noticed really helps. I just... get the ice on the wrists and it kind of brings it back to baseline. It's almost like you started the set over and you don't have all the like the rigors going through your wrists. So that works pretty well for me.
I mean, that sucks that you're going through that, but you've obviously found something that works.
I think I played in a style for a lot of years that was just really fast and I didn't like hold back. I was just, and I don't know, there's so many years you can do that until it starts to kind of tear up your wrists, I guess.
Have you got like a specific warm-up routine now?
That's the thing. I don't.
even after that? Oh, my God.
I don't know if I learned my lesson. I don't know. Every my whole attitude towards warming up is kind of weird because I feel like it just makes me more tired, and I'd like to save that energy for the set.
You do have so many notes.
It's just a lot of playing.
For a drummer, there's so many kicks and so many snares.
It's a lot of playing. And if I'm in the last song of like, you know, a 75-minute set and I'm locking up, I'm like, why the fuck did I warm up? I shouldn't have warmed up and kept the strength for the set kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know. It's kind of a balance I try to keep.
Is the set, have you found the faster songs are getting sort of by the wayside as you get, you know, as the career progresses, or are you always going to have to play them? I've got songs where I'm like, I can't wait till we don't have to play this song anymore because it's really hard. Right.
No, I'd say we're always going to play them for sure. I mean, I don't think we'll ever play a show without playing Dreamhouse at the end of the day. So
I would be furious.
I think everyone would. You. I think everyone would. And we're aware of that. So yeah, we're definitely going to play the hits, as they say.
Is that the set closer? God, I love you. I said it to you personally, but not to the podcast. I love your band so much.
Oh, thank you. Hell yeah, I appreciate that.
I remember it.
Excuse me.
Exactly the same. There's very few bands that I remember exactly where I was the first time I heard it. Death Heaven, China. I was in China on tour.
Very cool.
It was horrific. The tour was like, every show had like two people there.
Oh no.
We were malnourished. We hadn't slept. There was any of this stuff.
You're that far from home, so you're like, oh.
And it was, yeah, and it was 2013. It was summer 2013. And that album had just been popping off, and I'd never heard of Death Heaven before. And then someone was like, oh, it's like black metal with shoegaze. And I was like, fuck off, is it? And then I just popped it on. I remember exactly where I was in this shitty little Chinese van going. It was the best day of that tour. It was the last day of the tour. We were going to the Great Wall of China. So obviously it's
awesome.
Amazing.
I've never been, so that's cool.
Popped it on and just immediately was just like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Okay.
Fell asleep during one of the interludes, which I do want to ask some questions about the interludes.
Yeah.
Fell asleep during one of the interludes. Can't remember which one.
It's kind of a compliment. I like that.
Oh, no. And it became hypnotic. My sleeping album on tour. Yeah, because nice. The blasts, look, I don't know about you as a drummer, blasts like lull me to sleep for as sure. Well. I'm a big blast beat guy, but this has enough up and down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's whatever the interlude is before the, you would say the pecan tree. I would say the pecan tree.
The pecan? Well, it's even a thing in the States between a pecan or a pecan.
So what would you call that song?
I say pecan, but Carrie says pecan. So,
yeah, interesting.
I mean, it literally varies between Americans too.
It was the interlude before that song, and then it woke me up so so aggressively when that song, pecan tree, starts with the blast.
Comes out of nowhere, yeah.
Some fucking rules.
That interlude is particularly funny. It's a... field recording from...
That's what I wanted to ask you.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
What are they? Because one of them has two.
Yeah, so this would be the interlude that has the field recordings from San Francisco. It's just, you know, sounds of the city, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's actually also Carrie being in the downtown kind of sketchy area, just hanging out with sketchy homeless people and just getting like... just getting just the vibe of that entire feel of being in that area of the city, which is so unique. You know, have you been in the Tenderloin downtown San Francisco? It's essentially right by Union Square.
I'll tell you where the venues I've played, and you can tell me if I'm anywhere near these. Warfield.
Yeah, it's literally there. So Warfield's on Market, which I used to live right around the corner from for 10 years. And that's Market Street. But right above that is the Tenderloin, which is essentially the open air drug market of San Francisco.
I do remember it being kind of sketchy.
It's junky land, you know what I mean? Just tent cities, just insanity. So, I don't know, we just kind of wanted to capture some of that atmosphere because that's what we lived in, that's what we experienced, and if we're going to make an album about ourselves, we wanted to include that for sure.
So what? They just went around with a recorder?
Yeah, yeah. Sketchy.
In the pocket or...?
In the pocket. It was his phone, just phone recordings.
I've tried to decipher... See, I didn't know this. I've tried to decipher what it is a bunch of times because I feel like if I'm thinking of the same interlude, that pan... one way, and there's something else panned the other way.
Sure, and then the other one is a street preacher.
That's what I thought
just
that was.
A guy just screaming about the fires of hell, you know, downtown SF, trying to save the sinners.
It's amazing, because you can hear a drug deal happening.
Right.
In one...
I don't want to say it, but yeah.
In one end. We can say whatever the hell we want. You can hear a drug deal happening in one ear.
Right.
And then the street preacher in the other ear, and then... Is it the one before the pecan tree?
It is, yeah.
Which is my favorite song on the album. Those, oh, if you don't know this band, come on, get involved.
Yeah, it was fun to make. I had actually just met those guys maybe 4 months before we recorded that record. So
you weren't on the first record?
No, I was not on the first record. Actually, when I met those guys, they were in a little bit of a difficult situation. They had lost their band, essentially. Everyone that they were playing with had kind of left them behind and... wasn't willing to travel, wasn't willing to play. There wasn't a lot of money involved back then, you know. But I had met them, and they're ready to hang it up. They're like, yeah, we don't even know if our band's going to be anything. I was like, well, I'm here. and tried me out. We ended up playing Violet together, and they're like, "You're the guy." And like that same night, we ended up Carrie ended up showing me a couple riffs from Dreamhouse, and he's like, "Yeah, just like this would be a blast. Maybe freak out on the second part." And we put it together, and we're like, "This sounds fucking sick." And from then on, we knew it was meant to be. And after that practice, I was like, "So what do you guys do? Like, you know, what kind of guys are you?" And they're like, "I don't know. We should go to the bar and chat." And I was like, "We should get a flask of whiskey and walk over and chat about it." And immediately just started vibing and led a similar lifestyle, you know, similar viewpoint of everything. And then eventually we needed a guitarist, and I knew the perfect guy, you know, my best friend Shiv, who was, I was in a different band called Creepers at the time with, and just made the most sense that he joined up with us. And yeah, we've never looked back.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Lineup's been the same, bassist?
Except for the bass player. Our original bass player in that era was Steve Clark, who's a super good friend that we had the craziest experiences with, its wildest tours. And I think he kind of had a different vision of what he wanted to do, so he ended up parting ways. And then we got our original sound engineer, Chris Johnson. We had worked with him a few times in the past, and we loved his energy, knew he was an incredible bassist. And once Steve was kind of on the way out, I was like, "Oh, I know the perfect guy." And we call him Kush, affectionately, Chris Johnson.
Kush with a K?
Yeah, exactly.
Is he the weed guy?
Well, we're all weed guys.
You're all the weed guys.
But it was it's a little cruel, but whenever we get a new guy in the crew, we kind of like, you know, rib him a little bit. We call him something funny. And I was like, "I want to call him, like, Chris, I'm going to call you Piss." But immediately, it was so sweet and so just kind and cool to be around. I was like, I want to call this fool something that I really love. I'm going to call you Kush. And he's nice. He's been Kush ever since. So, and he joined back in early 2017, and he's been a solid member ever since. So,
nice.
Yeah.
What's your pre-show Kush ability? Do you do it, or are you?
It's kind of just perpetual for me.
Is it?
Yeah.
I wish I was you. I used to be able to smoke. I used to love it. I was talking about this yesterday, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be like a, you know, not like a stoner, but like I used to love it. Just to relax.
Right.
And then one day something just snapped in my head.
I feel like that's a really common occurrence. I've heard that a lot. Yeah, just kind of just get in your own head, just start overthinking things kind of thing.
And it comes in waves, because there was a time when One-to-One came out. Like,
oh, right, CBD.
CBD to THC, because I tried CBD and I was like, this is not doing anything.
It's kind of placebo in my opinion. I don't know.
But the one-to-one stuff, because it just ends up with a weaker THC.
Right.
Like the ratio, I could smoke that for a while and then that went as well. I'm just like, I can't do fucking anything.
I've heard that like CBD can actually be like a remedy to being too high.
Yeah.
Like if you're just like really stoned, if you take some CBD, it can like reduce it. But I don't know. It's just something that kind of vibes with me. And
I wish.
Maybe it's just being a California person. It's kind of always been in the conversation. It's always been around. And I've always preferred it to alcohol, just because alcohol is a lot harsher on your system. It causes a lot more destruction in general. So yeah, I think it gets a bad rap. But being from California, it's very much as part of our culture.
Yeah, I need to get back on it, because I'm one of those people, I need a little escape sometimes.
Sure.
And with weed gone, it's alcohol. And it's like, that's not great for me.
I mean, at the end of the day, it is just a habit. You know, it costs a lot of money. You know, I wouldn't recommend it to someone who isn't already, but
I started vaping nicotine for fun on our last tour, because I was really bored. I was just I'm just going to start vaping. Yeah. And then I got home and I was like, this is ridiculous. So I had to quit that.
Right.
But now I need one vice.
Yeah, I think that's true with everyone. Like I did a booze-free tour last year. I don't drink a whole lot, but sometimes I just need to say no for a while. And I started vaping nicotine too.
Really? Like, on tour?
Yeah, I was like, I need something destructive to do. I used to smoke cigs. I was a cigarette smoker for a long time. But
it was the same thing. I did a dry tour, and I was like, nah, I need something.
It's almost like a sober guy like habit. You know, yeah. Like, it's like a big thing. And you know, I don't go to recovery personally, but I feel like if I were to, I would see a lot of Elf bars up there, a lot of vapes in general. I think, yeah, people just need something some kind of vice, some kind of thing to.
It did work though. Yeah. I don't know about you. It worked. I didn't drink for the whole, maybe like 2 days at the end when I was like party time. But
sure. Yeah. No, I lasted for, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, and it was cool.
Do you still vape, or did you quit?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
See, I quit and it was quite easy. So I was like, I'm just going to do that again. When I go on tour, I'm going to start vaping again.
I think that's the thing. They say that about nicotine vapes versus cigarettes, is that there are more addictive chemicals in the cigarette. So it's easier to quit vaping.
Cigarettes still, I haven't smoked since I was like 21. Cigarettes still, I still watch someone smoke a cigarette in a movie and I'm like, fuck yeah, that looks cool and awesome.
That's why everyone smoked. Movies, you know what I mean? Like, my absolute favorite in the favorite movie in the world, The Lost Boys, the 80s vampire flick. Sig in every scene. I'm like, I want to be like that.
It's very on brand. That's your favorite movie. Something I like to do sometimes on the podcast, you want to give me your top five movies?
Oh, wow. That's incredibly difficult. I could try.
You can just, we'll prize them out of you.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, Lost Boys always is up there. I'm a huge horror fan, so it's got to be those. Like,
oh, I could talk about horror all day.
Same. I love Carpenter's my favorite director. Yeah. So 78 Halloween all day. Top five, though. Jesus. I guess I'll just go with that genre.
Yeah, give me top five horror movies.
The Thing.
The Thing, I feel like this is controversial. But as you can see by the lighting setup here, I'm an A24 junkie, right? The Thing is my favorite horror movie of all time. Mm. Practical effects, just everything.
Right. Incredible.
But I feel like a close second is Hereditary.
Oh, Hereditary is awesome. Oh. It's fucked up, dude.
It's like the only horror film recently that I've seen, I mean, in the last, whatever, 5 years, and gone, okay, that was...
actually gnarly.
Yeah, that was like 80s.
Totally. Yeah, I would agree. Hereditary was pretty intense. I mean, the build-up is gnarly. And you think that the big scene is that, you know, the car scene, you're like, whoa, it's over. But dude, the ending is so chilling.
I love the ending.
It's just like, it's haunting.
So many people I know that don't really like horror, but like to be scared, were like, oh, I liked it until the ending. I was like, what? The ending was the best bit.
Yeah, it's like the climax, man.
Sorry, I derailed you. Continue.
No, it's okay.
Lost Boys, Halloween, The Thing.
The Thing. What else we got? I mean, I gotta go old school classics. Cause The Godfather is like probably my favorite movie, and that's because of my dad. My dad really turned me on to that whole
same
idea of cinema, and even the subject matter. He's Italian, so I come from that culture on that side. And you know, it's when you're Italian, it's a very big deal. You talk about how you're Italian all the time.
Yeah.
I'm Italian, and then you get into the movies, you get into the mob stuff, and yeah, Godfather's incredible. Goodfellas is another one of my absolute favorite movies.
I rewatched Casino the other day because I hadn't seen it in so long.
Man, we were watching Casino on tour, and I was kind of like astounded at how dark that movie is. Mm. It's just the whole time, it's just oppressive. You're like, fuck.
Those two arguing constantly. Yeah. Speaking of arguing and horror, fuck off, everyone. Oh, I talk about drums. have you seen Possessed?
No. Wait, are you thinking Possession?
Possession.
Yeah, so Shiv just watched this movie, and he's like, bruh, you gotta watch Possession. It's fucking crazy.
Fucking, mate.
Sam Neill, right?
Sam Neill, yeah.
I haven't seen it. I gotta watch it. It's pretty... Is it intense?
It's the most intense... So speaking of, like, spouses arguing...
Right.
The most accurate... I don't know if you've ever argued with a spouse or been in an entire relationship of it.
I got a ring, don't I?
Oh, good for you. The most accurate portrayal of like truly toxic relationship for the first like 20 minutes or so.
Mm.
And then it gets insane.
Yeah.
And it's the whole, I don't know how much they told you, but the whole thing is like an allegory for the director's divorce.
Oh, dark.
And it's super like sometimes overacted,
yeah,
really deliberate close-up shots, and then crazy practical effect reveal.
It's kind of all about the main actress, right? Like she's just like wilding out the whole time.
She's
like
such a great actress. Right. It's crazy.
Yeah, wasn't like banned at some point?
Yeah.
Yeah, for being too graphic.
Super graphic, super, I really don't want to ruin it for you, but like
sure.
There's one scene where you just go, oh, okay, that's why.
The practical effect reveal.
That's why they banned it, okay. Yeah, Possession, not
Possession.
Possessor is what I'm thinking of, which is...
Oh, that's the Brandon Cronenberg flick.
That's what I was thinking of.
Which is incredible.
I could literally talk about horror all day.
Same.
People will be absolutely annoyed at me for not talking about music drums.
Should we talk about some drums? I mean, I don't know.
We'll talk about music and if it divulges into drums. I want to talk about sex, baby. I don't want to talk about sex. I want to talk about foundational nutrition. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you will know that I have pretty much got rid of all of my supplements and all of my biohacking BS because I've been taking AG1 instead. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. I take one scoop of AG1 with 250 milliliters of water every single day. Even when I'm on tour, I've got the travel packs, right? Just open them up, stick them in a bottle of water, shake it up, drink it, and it is a godsend when I'm on tour. Two reasons. I don't get stopped at the airport, Mr. What's this powder? Because it's in a lovely little packet. They go, that looks legit. Two, tour is about getting sick and getting stressed, as well as maybe playing some shows. Thanks to the blend of stress adaptogens in AG1, like ashwagandha, and the immune-supporting vitamins and minerals like vitamin C, magnesium, I get all the support I need for those two painful parts of tour in one scoop. You know I wouldn't be telling you about this if I didn't truly, truly, truly believe it. That's why AG1 has been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thedownbeat. That's drinkag1.com/thedownbeat. Check it out. What your influences as a musician/drummer?
Sure, I mean, definitely like we were talking about in the early days with, you know, Lars Ulrich and Vinnie Paul and Dave Lombardo. And it's actually kind of funny. I took drum lessons for maybe 2 or 3 months when I started, when I was, you know, 12 or whatever. And I was in this little hole in the wall music shop in Dublin, California. I was doing my lessons. I was waiting for my lessons one day, and I was playing on these Z Customs, you know, Lars Ulrich, infamous Z Customs Zildjian hats.
Love them.
I was like, this is sick, fuck yeah. And like my drum instructor, Rick, came out. He's like, what are you playing on? I'm like, oh, I'm playing on these Z Customs, man. It's like, Lars Ulrich plays them. Do my drum lesson or whatever. Go home. Come back the next week, go into my drum lesson, and Rick is like, man, this kid was telling me that the Z Custom hi-hat sounded good. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, bro? And I just want to be like, that was me. I had no idea he was talking about me. I was like, come on, bro. Like,
what the hell? They do sound good.
Yeah, they sound
sick, right?
They
were so sick.
He was being a hater, you know, whatever. But I didn't continue lessons too much longer after that. But
yeah, after he smoked you in person. Yeah. Are you a Zildjian guy now?
No, I actually have Istanbul. Istanbul is my sponsorship.
That's
awesome.
I got in so much trouble. My whole thing with leaving. I've never actually talked about this on the podcast. My whole thing, I left Meinl recently.
Right, I saw that you switched over to Zildjian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Meinl chewed me out in a meeting. They called a meeting to chew me out for basically saying that Istanbul make good cymbals on a YouTube video. And I was like, are you fucking for real? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, I'm not going to go into the huge detail, but
sure.
It was actually from me complimenting an Istanbul symbol that we started this big argument. Wow. And I was like, oh, fuck you guys.
So Istanbul was the other lady in your situation?
And not even, it was just me saying they were nice on some, it was like a sleep token reaction video. I was like, they're nice symbols. I
right.
feel like they're pretty, they suit you.
Yeah, I think they were great. When I signed up with them, you know, a handful of years ago, they sent me a set of the Exist symbols. And they sound incredible.
Are they the dark looking ones?
They're I would compare them to the A's, Zildjian A's.
Oh right, yeah.
Yeah, not too brilliant, just kinda a symbol. I've always been really basic with my equipment and my gear choices. I'm pretty standard, very stripped down and simplified. Maybe a little too simplified.
Run me through the setup.
Sure, yeah. Well, I got a Tama sponsorship back in 2015. Come up.
We fucking love them.
Yeah, so good. I got the Star Classic. It's actually discontinued. It's the Birch Bubinga.
Yep.
Apparently Bubinga is a problematic wood, so don't make that anymore. But I got the Star Classic, Birch Bubinga, 13-inch rack, 16-inch floor, 22-inch kick, very standard sizes. Then I got a 14-inch by 5.5-inch dynamic bronze snare.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I like the bronze snare. I'm trying to get a new one. I might even get a wood snare soon just to like fuck around. No. I played a Black Beauty on a recording and I fucking loved it. That was the only thing that I was like, maybe I should fuck with a Black Beauty. But
so is it Sam Gamble that you deal with at Tamron?
Yeah, exactly.
Love Sam. Mm-hmm. He's not gonna be happy if you play a Black Beauty though. But you know which Tama do a cymbal, a snare that's kind of like a Black Beauty ish. And I think it's like a Starphonic brass, and it's a 14x6.
Okay.
And it sounds like a Black Beauty.
Yeah.
Similar.
Brass.
Yeah.
Cool.
Similar thing. Because the Black Beauty is black nickel over brass.
So. Oh, okay. That's how much I know. I thought a Black Beauty was a wooden snare.
No, it's a black nickel over brass, yeah.
So I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
And then how many cymbals you got?
So I got the 14-inch hi-hats, a 19-inch crash, 22-inch ride, and then I have a 20-inch ride right here. I was playing a crash over here, but I was breaking it every 5 shows. Yep. So I pretty much was like, I'm just going to play a ride. And sounds great.
So is that a 22 and a 20?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's kind of weird because they're literally the same cymbal, but 2 inches different. And I've never had a China cymbal or a splash cymbal just because I kind of like that washy sound. I like the fact that it makes it sound not like a metal song per se. I feel like if you were to add that China tone or that splash tone, it would make it sound a little more metallic overall. And I don't know, I kind of like the idea of just having a wash of cymbals.
Yeah, and it comes across. When you record, is it like, I've always thought this, because your band is, you know, it's metal, but it's very analog sounding.
Right.
Like, are you doing multiple takes? Are you punching in section by section?
No, definitely not. If anything, we up until Infinite Granite, we recorded to tape.
Straight to tape.
Yeah, that's how we recorded Sunbather, New Bermuda, and Ordinary Corrupt Human Love.
The intensity is so insane. Like, no wonder your fucking wrists are fucked.
Yeah, I definitely try to nail it on the first take because I don't want to play it again.
And just full takes.
Yeah, and that's kind of the vibe on it. Is I just want to get it done simply so I don't have to play it more than once. Because if I have to record more than a couple songs in a day, by the end of the day, I just won't even be able to play the song I'm trying to play.
I honestly can't remember the last time that I recorded a song back to front. I think there's one on the last Stray record where.
Gotcha.
Because it was just, I don't know, a different style and everything, but like.
Yeah.
What you were saying about your cymbals, the washiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's like painting, a landscape of and sound.
I liked what you said earlier about how Sunbather became your sleep album. It was a great compliment because I kind of felt that way about the music the whole time we were making it, and that it is so drawn out and repetitive in the blast beats. You know, I'm blasting for like 3 straight minutes at some point. And I think that the coolest part about that is the hypnotic quality of it. Kind of just the hypnotizing, like just wash, just wall of noise kind of thing.
You can only get it with real blasts.
I think so. And on top of that, I play single kick blasts. It's always single kick blasts. The only time I use a double kick on a blast beat is Brought to the Water, because it's just so incredibly fast.
Such a good song.
And then Black Brick, one of the newer songs, because I'm blasting for fucking 5 minutes. So I'm just like, I gotta use a double kick. But other than that, I like to use single. One, because I can't play like the accents with my right hand. If I'm doing double, I'm just not good enough at drums, you know what I mean? And then two, I feel like it just kind of opens up the whole feel of it and makes it sound a little more, not swingy, but just open in general. Less tight, more kind of open. It, not sloppy, but yeah.
It's like it's the classic like Euro blast sound.
It's the black metal blast.
It's the black metal blast. Yeah. And I know what you mean. I mean, I too for all my blasts, but like, and that's just through sheer laziness. But we've got a couple of songs where it is, well, I mean, you do it the whole set pretty much, where there's like a group of three on the ride.
Oh, like a triplet blast. Yeah, like that's what we call it.
A triplet blast. Mm-hmm. But like trying to do that with 2 feet,
it's hard as hell.
It like swaps every other feet.
It's super hard. Difficult. Yeah, I to this day cannot play a triple blast with double kick. I can't do it. And then I like to do a lot of just throwing a little crash in there, a little hi-hat to like match the guitar riff. And if I were to be using a double kick, like it's hard. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's like I can't get like the accent down. So I just fuck it, single kick the whole time.
What pedals are you using for this single kick wizardry?
Tama hooked me up with an Iron Cobra. I think this is the basic Iron Cobra.
Yeah.
I've been using it since 2015.
Can't beat them.
Yeah. Like a lot of people use the Speed Cobras and the Axis pedals. And I've just never been like a tech metal drummer. If anything, I'm like a non-metal drummer that kind of just plays metal on top of that. So I just kind of stick with that vibe.
Speaking of a non-metal vibe, did you get any... I mean, I'll show you the proof. Infinite Granite. It was my top played album of 2021.
Oh, awesome.
So I'm a sweater. Yeah. I'm a huge fucking fan. And I loved it. Like, loved it. I didn't see any kickback, but I just want to know, was there kickback?
There was definitely kickback for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's equal parts kickback and, you know, new people finding us.
Mm.
And there was really no prerogative behind that. It's just at that point in time, we wanted to make music that sounded like that. That's kind of been the whole idea with our band since day one, is when we get into a room to write music together, we don't have this grand plan. We kind of just
let's go more commercial in this,
right? Line. You know, no screaming allowed, no blast beats allowed. Yeah. It wasn't how it was. It just kind of turned out like that. And you know what we produced and created just wasn't aggressive. But I do enjoy the fact that Mombasa has that big final climax, you know, which I will say is a sign of things to come as well.
Is it coming back?
Not abandoned that, you know. Yeah. What I mean? So
there'll be people that are desperate to know that.
I think so.
I mean, I would quite happily, when a band changes, I don't care. Like, I do this, and little note to anyone, if I don't like it, then I don't listen to it anymore. It's super fucking easy.
That easy, right?
The other music still exists. I listen to that one. We're all good.
Yeah.
That band's usually influenced other bands, and I can move on.
Yeah, you don't take it personally. Like, why would you?
It's the fucking worst. I would have taken either from Death Heaven. Like, if you continue down that route, I'd be with you.
Hell yeah.
If you go back to Heavy, I'll definitely be with you. There's no way that you're not going to do blasts. Like, I know you've got poorly wrists, but...
Oh, I'm going to blast forever.
Yeah, I can tell. It lives in you. Yeah. It absolutely fucking lives in you. At what point did you get into blasts then? Because you've got your Metallica, your Slayer, your Pantera, Sepultura... No blast beats.
Right.
What happened?
Sure, yeah. I would say it was probably freshman year of high school, after a couple of years of, you know, running the rounds of, you know, thrash and extreme and groove metal and stuff. Started listening to Cannibal Corpse, started listening to Morbid Angel. I started with death metal for sure. And,
yeah.
Expanded from there. Got super into Dying Fetus and Skinless and just all that slam shit.
Skinless? I haven't listened to Skinless in ages. Well, the Horizontals with...
Dude, Foreshadowing Our Demise. Incredible record.
The one they've got something from Puppet Master. Is that on that record?
I think every song has a movie sample. Oh. It's all over the place.
There's the one that's like, I can walk, I can talk, I can even shit my pants. Can you shit your pants? Straight into a blast. So sick.
Oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, then I started getting into some black metal. When I was freshman in high school, the last Emperor record, Prometheus, came out, and it just
huge.
Dominated every magazine, and you know, everyone in the metal world was just astounded. So I was so into that record. I found their older stuff through that and, you know, got into Burzum and Mayhem and all that stuff.
So annoying, like being a good person and listening to black metal. So difficult to, like, sometimes I'm just like, I'll find a new band and then deliberately just be like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know it.
Just
I don't
want to
know anything. I don't want to know anything. Yeah. And it always comes. Something always fucking happens. That's right. Why it's very nice to have... an unproblematic black metal band like Death Heaven.
Happy to be here. We try.
It's just the worst. It's so... And like, without getting myself cancelled, like, I get it in 1993 when you're a bunch of kids and you're just trying to be the most evil.
Sure. be extreme.
But like new, now I'm not going to try and go down this because you'll get a Metal Sucks article about.
There's a lot to be said about all that, but I don't know. I also thought it was a little frustrating that we got lumped in with that at all, because they just have zero in common with it. Period.
Yeah.
You know, like we don't live in the forest. We live in the city. You know, we don't live in the middle of nowhere. We live in a bustling urban landscape.
Yeah.
I feel like if anything, our music kind of represented being, you know, in your 20s, partying, going crazy, living in a city, living in an urban environment, which is very specific to California. And I think we embody that pretty well.
Did you ever tour with Wolves in the Throne Room? Has that ever been thrown around?
We've never toured with them, but we played a couple fests with them, and it's always great to see them. They're a fucking incredible band. And actually, the drummer who did play on Roads to Judah is playing with them now, Trevor DeShriver.
So, really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's still the current drummer
for Wolves. Aaron just came back like last week.
Okay, gotcha.
Aaron took time off and was still writing, but wasn't going on tour. So I must have, last time I saw them, that must have been, what's his name, Trevor?
Trevor, yeah.
I must have seen them play with him. He was really good.
He's sick. He's great. Yeah, he was in a band called Lycus as well back in the day, and they're really cool. And yeah.
I just love the light and dark. Like, you guys and Wolves are like, give me a wall of blasts, then give me something nice.
Yeah.
Bring me back to the blasts. Like, that's, I love it.
Something I've always valued about our sound, for sure, is that we kind of always viewed ourselves as a band that can fit anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
You play any metal fest, play any indie fest. You know, we play Coachella, we played Bonnaroo, but we also played Roadburn and Decibel Beer Metal Fest, you know?
It's literally the dream, to be honest. Like, you can play pop festivals.
That's pretty nice. Yeah. Like, although these days, you know, you got hardcore bands playing Coachella and, you know, it's kind of taking over, which is cool.
We had Demi Lovato posted us on her story.
Heard about that. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's a cool, like, metal or, like, underground metal is cool again.
It's kind of having a moment right now, I think. Yeah, for sure. Lots of bands doing really high-profile things. It's awesome.
Yeah, I hope Coachella does, like, a heavy stage or something.
That would be sick. Like, I mean, if things are going the way they're going, there's going to be a demand for it, you know? I think kids are really excited to see something different, something that's not a DJ, something that's not a rapper, something that's not a pop singer. Just want something a little different, you know.
Have you got any super famous fans?
Super famous fans.
I mean, because I would say Demi Lovato's a Stray fan now, and I'm like, that's cool. This is cool.
It's a very cool claim.
But you must have some.
I mean,
you got a cool band.
We got a few. I mean, you'd be surprised. People don't reach out as much as you think they would, but it was really, really flattering to see Billy Corgan kind of put us on a little bit.
That's fucking cool.
We played the World as a Vampire Fest. You know, a few months ago. It was fucking awesome. He was side stage checking us out. It was really cool.
Amazing.
It was a crazy story. We played Rock on the Range in Columbus, Ohio in 2017.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like a whatever fest. Metallica was playing. They were headlining. We're like, that'd be cool. Maybe we could see Metallica later. And we played at like, I think, 4 p.m. on like a nothing stage or whatever. Getting ready to go on stage, getting ready for a set, getting kind of pumped up. Literally about to walk out, and I feel a tap on my shoulder, and I'm like, it's Lars.
No way.
I was like, what the fuck? He's like, what's up, dude? Like, he knew the effect he was going to have on me. He's like, what's up, dude? He was like, no, he said, I hear this is where all the cool Bay Area cats are hanging out. I was like, what's up, man? And he's like, yeah, I just want to check out your set. I was like, thanks, dude. He's like, yeah, rock it. And
that would make my life.
It was incredible. It was so sick. And I have a friend, Christina. She actually snapped a pic of it, which is incredible. And so we went out there, played our set, and I look over to the right, James Hetfield's chilling there. I'm just like, whoa, this is incredible. And as soon as we get off stage, we're like, whoa, that's so awesome. Like, Lars was like, man, this is inspirational, which is the craziest thing I ever hoped to hear.
You know? That's fucking cool.
And he's like, you guys got to watch the side stage later. And we ended up getting on there, kind of, it was almost like a perch, like above the stage for friends and family. Just watched the whole Metallica set, just like rocking out. It was so much fun.
Man, that's fucking awesome.
Very cool.
Like, did it make you play better or worse?
I think I played perfectly. I played great.
I would have activated something in me. If Lars Ulrich is watching me play the drums, I'd be like,
absolutely,
I'm gonna fucking smoke this.
Yeah, I'm not missing a beat.
They've got their finger. I'm sorry, it's about Metallica again. Shut up. They got their finger on the pulse with like younger bands, and it's never like, obviously, you guys in your time have had some hype, but it's never like flavor of the minute, like super hype band right now. Mm. It's like the bands that are hyped because they're really, really good.
Yeah.
Metallica's always got... I remember they took The Sword on tour and stuff like that. It's right, like, right. They just like good music.
Yeah, they know what's up. They're aware.
You didn't get a tour offer, though.
No, and that's something I've been waiting for, but I guess I mean,
they took Architects recently. Architects is heavy. They played a lot of heavy stuff.
Right. I feel like... Yeah, I don't know. We've kind of thought about that in the past, and, you know, if it happens, it'll happen. Can't push for it too much.
I want it to happen so much.
Me too.
Yeah, for everyone involved. So Infinite Granite was not to tape. First time not to tape.
Yeah. So this is actually the first time we worked with a producer as well.
What was the other ones?
So we had Jack Shirley did produce the previous three records, but I guess when I say producer, I mean someone who is kind of more involved in the writing process.
Right.
Was there every step of the way, putting the songs together. And that was we found that in Justin Meldal Johnson, who has actually worked with just an incredible amount of artists. He's Beck's bass player. He's worked with Beck. He's worked with Air. He's worked with so many bands that are just so incredible.
How did that happen?
I don't even know. I'm not sure if he reached out to George or if it was vice versa. I think he may have reached out to George and been like, "I just love your guys' band. I really want to work with you." It was kind of just, you know, it just went off from there. And we were putting the album together back in 2020. We're lucky to have our manager's house to hang out and kind of write music at and just spend a lot of time at. And he'd be there every day, you know, critiquing the songs, like telling us what works and what doesn't. And he kind of got us on the click track vibe, which we've never done before.
The other records aren't on a click either.
No, definitely not.
Are inhuman.
Thank you.
That's unbelievable. I'm actually mind blown.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I feel like it's a distinct part of my style and that I do fluctuate tempo a lot. I try to push and pull it.
I just assumed it was just programmed in.
Like it mapped, right?
Yeah, because we map ours and it is all over the place, but still a click. Click live either.
Just a click live for Infinite Granite songs. Yeah, once we started doing that record is when we actually started using in-ears.
Yeah.
And the only reason we used in-ears is because of the click track.
Yeah, you need it.
And since we do use a click track, we can put tracks on, you know, into the performance now. You can even do, you know, lights synced up to the click or whatever. Just a lot of benefits for it. But currently in our live set, we'll play the old songs just raw, and then the click will start just for the Infinite songs. So it's kind of like, you know, two or three songs throughout the set, we'll have a click. Yeah. But otherwise, just go for it.
Do you still stagger old and new, or do you
definitely
them together?
Depends on the set, but... it's kind of cool for me because, you know, I'll be playing the old songs, just ripping, have a new song.
You get to fucking chill.
I get to chill. It's a perfect breather. And honestly, since we've thrown those Infinite songs into the set, like, it's been way chiller for me.
Yeah,
It's been awesome. I've had to use the ice a lot less.
Yeah. The songs are still so good, though. Like, if you were explaining Death Heaven to someone who doesn't really know a lot about, like, underground metal, what explanation would you give for the genre?
Oh man, I don't know. I feel like if I were to talk to someone that doesn't know anything about music at all, I'd just be like, yeah, we're a metal band, but we, you know, we kind of sound like we're kind of a rock band too. just an amalgamation of rock and metal and everything under that blanket, I guess.
Okay, so then level up from that, someone who does know about metal, then what do you say?
Well,
like what? Like who do you sound like?
I'll give you my direct influences for Sunbather's drum performances.
Yeah, go.
Sean Kinney from Alice in Chains, Trim Torsen from Emperor.
We just combined the two together.
Exactly.
That's fucking cool. Man, you seen those videos of Trim at the moment? Still just absolutely crushing.
We had the pleasure of playing with them. We did three shows with them in Japan, of all places.
Oh, amazing.
So fucking sick. Oh, my God. And they're playing Anthems to the Welkin front to back, which is my favorite Emperor record.
Yeah, same.
So I was just tripping the whole time. I was just, like, fanboying the entire time.
And that tempo change in the first song, the first time I ever heard that. Whatever, is it Ye Trance?
In Trance Imperium?
There we go.
Ye in Trance Imperium.
Yeah. So the tempo change... into the blast beat.
It's insane.
Is the cool, still the coolest tempo change of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually got to play on that kit. Yeah, I saw Trim backstage. He's like, "You want to come up and play?" I was like, "Fuck yeah."
Is he nice?
He's super cool. We're talking shit. we're talking about Double Kick, and he's like, "Oh, these guys these days are doing doubles on the Double Kick. I don't do that shit. It's all singles."
Yeah, he's like,
it hurts when I play. He's all proud of the pain, you know.
Yeah, that's what we're saying earlier. Oh, European, yeah. European.
There you go.
Oh, it's painful. Yeah, I'll do it.
Sign me up.
Would you say he's one of your one of your top influences?
Absolutely. I would say he's my favorite black metal drummer for sure.
Yeah.
Hellhammer and Frost are fucking incredible, but I feel like they're just speed guys, which is its own thing. But the way Trim opens up the blast and just kind of uses his right hand to hit just the coolest accents, and I don't know, just a whole like kind of jazzy feel to it, which I really like.
And he's got the sort of traditional one footing.
Yeah.
Down.
Exactly.
Do you know who I'd say my favorite is? I don't know if this is like a crap answer for like black metal elitists.
There are no crap answers. Come on.
Nick Barker.
Oh, bro. Nick Barker's so sick.
Just I remember when that photo came out when he had the black kit with the black symbols and the black sunglasses on.
Black the fuck out.
I was just like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Yeah.
But George and I connect on that a lot. We were both big time Cradle and Dimmu heads back in the day. So.
Yeah. The first three Cradle, the first three Dimmu, and then both I don't care about. I mean, actually, the new Cradle's pretty good.
New Cradle's sick.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I think it's because they went back to, what's his name? I can't remember. Anyway.
Didn't he kind of like revamp the whole band?
Yeah. And they went to, who the fuck is the producer? He did Psilosis. Scott Atkins.
Gotcha.
And that guy just knows a thrashy riff and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Nick Barker's Alesis DM5 drum sound.
Might as well be V drums.
But the splash work.
Yeah.
That's what made me have a splash. And you don't have a splash. You want to chuck a splash in there?
I mean, I would have a splash if I wanted to sound metallic.
Yeah, true, actually. I want to sound like a little robot that's been sped up.
There you go.
And you're very much
I'm trying to sound like a warm analog vinyl, you know what I mean?
It surprised me not, I guess, one foot blast. It surprised me not playing a 24.
Kick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never tried a 24. It might be cool.
Like the shallow 24, sound and feel amazing to play.
I've actually never not played a 22, so could be worth trying.
I can see you with a 24-14.
Yeah.
Because I did the maths once because I actually love a 24-14. It's the same amount of air.
The same volume, I guess.
Yeah. So you're not actually pushing that much more. Mm. But because it's bigger, you can tune it lower.
Gotcha.
Makes a lower fundamental note and right. Look kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I tune my kick is like flappy, you know, like barely on there. So maybe a bigger size would be beneficial.
Hey, Sam, get this man a 24. I know you're watching, Sam.
Come on,
Get the man a 24. The Starphonic Brass. Or actually, there's another one. I think it's a Stuart Copeland signature.
Nice.
Signature fucking snare.
Love Stuart Copeland.
Great drummer. Love to have him in that chair. Although I am enjoying you being in that chair.
Sorry, I'm not Stu, bro.
You're good. You're from the same coast of the country. Now, have you got any pre-show rituals? Because you say you don't warm up, you don't drink, you smoke weed all day.
That's pretty much it. I mean, if anything, I like to isolate myself. And the other guys, they like to kind of socialize a lot beforehand, and even leading up to like going on stage, they'll be like having a conversation with a friend, be like, oh, I gotta go play now. It's not really me. I like to kind of isolate myself for about 30 minutes. I'll go to the bunk on the bandwagon and just put headphones on and just kind of zone out for a bit. Then I just kind of go in like almost like I just woke up, like, all right, time to work. That's kind of the vibe I like. So if anything, just relaxing and kind of de-stressing myself as much as I possibly can, and then 5 minutes before set, do some jumping jacks and go out there and play.
Don't even touch a pair of sticks.
No. I mean,
what's the first song in the set?
Black Brick.
Oh my God, you're a fucking psycho.
And honestly, Black Brick to me is a warm up because the entire song is a single stroke roll. Every whole thing, I'm just blah, 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 blah.
Do you come at it with less intensity because it's the first song in order to warm up?
It's also the only double kick blast of the set besides the intro brat or whatever. So yeah, I kind of it's not the hardest thing in the world for me because I'm kind of chilling there playing the double kick, and at that point, it's just playing a single stroke for as long as I can.
Which is what I do to warm up anyway.
Sure, exactly, right on. So as I'm doing it in front of a lot of people, but it's the same idea.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing you later. There's also another band on Void of Light, who I share a drum room.
Okay, cool.
With the drummer, Steve, and Steve, I don't know, I never like to assume a Dan or a Steve.
Just call him Stevie.
Steve. I think actually he might be a Stevie. Really? You might be right.
That's that's my wife's name, actually.
Well, there we go. Stevie, yeah.
Oops.
I know what sometimes if I'm in or I have to go and collect something and go into the room, he's blasting away. He's a blaster, but he's got like a big two kicks.
Nice.
He's got the Nick Barker
setup. He's got the full-blown metal setup.
Much. So yeah. That'll be, I think they're either on before you or they're on a different stage or whatever. I've not been to that venue before.
I feel like that happens 9 times out of 10. We play a metal festival. I set up my kit and I'm just surrounded by these behemoths of drum sets. I'm just like, holy shit. I got my little jazz setup. I like it better. It's just my style. You know?
What's your stage clothes?
Kind of alternates, but I just wear all black, very basic.
Trousers.
See, that's the thing, man. For years and years, I was super stubborn, and I would wear super fucking skinny black jeans.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where it was rubbing the hair off of my legs,
yeah.
And I have permanent bald spots on my legs from just blasting.
Blast alopecia.
Straight up.
So you wear shorts now?
Sometimes I wear shorts. Sometimes I wear just like warm-up pants or whatever. Kind of just whatever's lying around. But yeah. Just really
it feels like it's, sorry to cut you up, it feels like it's such an arty band. If I saw a drummer wearing shorts for that band with a small drum kit, I'd be like,
dude, that's the exact,
what's going on here?
That's the exact reason I didn't want to wear shorts.
Yeah. It's not shorts music.
Nah.
You're not on the beach.
Black pants music.
It is.
Yeah.
But fuck playing in black pants.
Sucks. I just kind of bit the bullet and did it for super long, but yeah, these days I do wear shorts on occasion. I'm going to wear shorts tonight, for sure.
Are you going to short everyone? No AC.
Yeah, Glasgow. I'm just trying to make it easy on myself. You know, this run in general is a little rough for us. It's 7 straight shows, lots of early mornings and long drives.
No bandwagon.
No bandwagon.
So we turn up in a van.
Exactly.
Van and hotels. Fuck.
It's kind of gnarly. Yeah, we haven't toured like this in a while. So I'm just trying to make it as easy on myself as I can. And shorts it is. You know, fuck
Where
it.
Are you tomorrow? Do you know?
Tomorrow is Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. Oh, that's a 45-minute drive. You are close. Easy.
Yeah. I think we're actually staying here. We're staying here tonight, going to play Edinburgh tomorrow, and then back here tonight to stay because it is so much nicer here, chiller, whatever.
It's the fucking best. Yeah, let me know if you need any recommendations or any of that.
Will do.
I don't want to take up too much of your time because you've got such a big fucking day ahead of you. It's what time is it? It's like...
I don't even know. 5-something?
It's... It's 6:15. What time do you play it?
We don't play till 10, but it would be good to go get some chill time.
Yeah, you need to chill. You need to eat, I imagine. What's your eating window before?
Oh, I usually like to do 2 hours. 2 hours is my cutoff. And I actually have to eat 2 hours before.
What's your go-to?
It's whatever's around. I'm not picky.
No dietary restrictions?
Actually, I do try to avoid gluten.
Really?
It just kind of fucks me up a little bit. And I think it might have been years and years of just pounding beers, just drinking beer after beer. And just, got a little bit of a aversion to that these days.
Beer fucks up my... I'm drinking non-alcoholic beer right now, but beer with alcohol, like the fermenting process, messes my sinuses up.
Same.
Right, last bit before I let you go and have your little chill time and some food. Top 5 artists of all time.
Top 5, God, it's so hard. Incredibly hard.
I like it. I like to make you sweat. This is your warm-up.
I've been sweating the whole interview.
Sorry, it's at no AC, but I'm sorry.
All right. I mean, I got to go from like the day ones, you know, when I was a kid and I heard something and it just changed everything. So I got to go Metallica. I got to go Pantera. I got to go Led Zeppelin. Because
nice.
Bonham is my favorite drummer. I just think
you got Bonham vibes.
He's the best drummer
ever. I see you in your slow sections.
That means a lot to me. I really appreciate that.
Definitely need a 24 now. Definitely. That's locked in.
Right? Yeah. I need a big-ass 24.
Coated head, 24.
Yeah. Maybe a gong. Oh, gong action.
Huge.
I've been thinking about adding a second floor tom. honestly.
I did it, and then it was an extra thing to set up, and then I don't know. I found myself not playing. I had the big. So if you got 16,
yeah.
So you would get an 18,
right?
I didn't do that. I got 14, 16, and it was like I wanted to hit the 16, but it was too far away.
Sure,
I could do 16, 18.
I feel like the only like significance of it would be to solo. So I can't really see myself doing like a lot of fills, but if you're doing those bottom triplets, you know what I mean? That'd be sick. But anyways, Zeppelin, Van Halen.
Really?
I love Van Halen. And this is a lot of my dad's influence coming out. Nice. You know, I grew up on rock and roll through him. So Van Halen is just so incredible to me. And am I at five? Yeah.
No, I need one more. You kind of glossed over the first three coming to one, like...
Alice in Chains.
Nice.
They might be, like, literally my favorite band. I just love that band so much. Every element of them is perfect to me. Their story is incredible. I mean, it's sad as hell, but it's just so heavy.
Unplugged is...
Oh, my God.
Just one of the best live just records of all time.
Thinking about it just gives me chills.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, Sean Kinney is just such an incredible drummer. And he's a guy that really, really fucks with splashes and chinas. So if I were to make that jump, it would be... And that Sean Kinney.
Those mixes as well. It's such a nice drum sound.
It's really sick. The first song that I ever learned to play on drums was Wood. And I just remember loving that Tom intro. The whole Tom groove to me was so cool. It really just kind of put me onto that style.
I think the first Odd Time song I ever learned was Them Bones.
Oh, nice.
Because I remember hearing it and being like, there's a beat. What? There's a beat missing.
Like, you can't fully headbang to this. Like, what's going on here?
I was like, wait a minute. I'm coming off. Unreal. All right, that'll do. That's good for me. If it's good for you.
It's great. Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
I hope you get a Metallica tour.
I'm trying. Every day I'm trying.
I'm trying to get Lars in that fucking chair right there.
Oh, yeah. Well, once we tour together, I'll put in a good word.
And I'll put in a good word for you for... Seth Meyers, because we were talking about that off camera.
Hey, let's do it.
And on that note, thanks very much. Enjoy your show. I can't wait. Hopefully see you again.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, thank you. Thank you.